Welcome one, welcome all to the Court of the Trashy Royals, where we assemble each week to reveal and revel in the tales of our betters behaving badly. My name is Stacy, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey friends, Alicia here, and my oh my. This week we are wrapping up the Edwina and Louis Mountbatten story with more antics and more affairs. Maybe a little redemption arc in this one too. Before we begin today's Naughty Nobles, we do have some thanks to give to our latest Patreon supporter, Just Sam.
Just Sam.
Just Sam, you rock. We appreciate you and all of our patrons. If you too would like to get early and ad-free episodes and other bonuses too, patreon.com/trashyroyalspodcast is the place to go to find out more. And Patreon friends, stay tuned. I got a fun bonus coming your way today. Right after recording this episode, Andy Bellotti, my very favorite from Astrology with Andy, and I are getting together to discuss the natal chart of Edwina Mountbatten, and you've never seen anything like it. I'm really excited about that one. Be sure to check Patreon for that video dropping as soon as I am done.
And I think this is our first bonus on Patreon that's not just an early ad-free episode.
So we may have a few more about jewels. We do some surprises.
We may be working on some things.
I think that's the business. It's time. Let us anon to the end of Edwina and Dickie, my friends. Ride we have been on with Edwina and Louis.
That's the truth.
We're going to get to the end of Edwina today. We still had a little bit more to follow up on in Louis, but today is going to cover the end of Dickie and Edwina together.
Because he outlived her by quite a bit, I think.
And had a whole bunch of trashy that happened after Edwina passed. We're going to get through Edwina's story today. Remember when we left her, we talked about her not being the greatest mom on earth?
I think that had come up, yes.
Let's go ahead and unpack that story just a little bit, as no one ever claimed that Edwina was an attentive or an involved mother. Remember, her mom wasn't. Her mom passed. Like, Edwina just didn't have that makeup.
And then she had the evil stepmother, basically.
Right. Like, there's not a lot of maternal influence going on for Edwina, and so it's not surprising she didn't really pass that to her children.
I mean, a maternal instinct would have gotten in the way of a lot of partying, so.
True that. Well, hold on, because there is one incident that really shines, that stands out among the rest as an example of just how uninvolved Edwina was. In the summer of 1935, while the family was still in Malta after Edwina's big scandal. Edwina, you need to lay low.
Right.
There was some political instability in the Mediterranean. All that's brewing after Italy decided to leave the League of Nations.
I was about to say, this has to be Italy, right? Because Italy is just politically unstable, period. Go ahead.
So Italy wants to bail on the League of Nations, and amid the growing crisis, Edwina smartly probably feels it's best for her to take her girls to Hungary because it's going to be safer than hanging out in Malta.
Sure.
In a little town near Budapest, Edwina finds a charming hotel in the mountains. She thinks it's going to be a great place for the girls and their nanny and their governess just to stay for a while to wait out the crisis.
This is when Italy decided to invade Ethiopia, right? Like one of Benito's early...
It's a lot.
...adventures, yeah.
You have these two girls, just imagine little Paddington bears...
Sure.
...trying to stay safe in the crisis. Yeah. And Edwina is going to take her girls to Budapest.
Outer Budapest.
Edwina drops off the kids with the...
Suburban Budapest.
...nanny and the governess and, you know...
Sure.
Have fun, girls. Edwina goes off on her merry way with her friends. And the girls don't really think anything about it Because they're perfectly content with their nanny and their governess.
They're safe.
Lady Pamela Hicks will recount the experience.
Edwina's daughter.
Correct. Lady Pamela Hicks, her daughter, India Hicks, has a podcast.
Oh, good.
And Lady Pamela Hicks has gone on India Hicks's podcast to talk a lot about her childhood and mother, Edwina. Mm-hmm. Really a fascinating journey. So Pamela Hicks tells her daughter, India Hicks, on her podcast that it got a little tricky because the nanny and the governess don't like each other. So the nanny, the governess, the two girls are in Budapest month after month after month.
Oh.
And the nanny...
So this wasn't a quick...
Hold on. Just simmer down there.
Okay.
Hot cakes, yeah.
Month after month, okay.
So the nanny and the governess don't like each other, which is causing a little bit of tension. But they're in Budapest, and the girls don't really think anything about it until Budapest, it turns out, begins to get cold for the fall and the winter, and they don't have any warm clothes.
Sure.
They only had spring and summer clothes, because that's when they started the journey with Mama.
Right.
And the nanny and the governess are now sewing the girls' new dresses for colder weather.
Wow.
Ripping down curtains from the wall, like Sound of Music. They're trying to sew clothes to keep the girls a little warmer because winter is coming.
Right. And it's not an era where like you could pop to Walmart and maybe they didn't have enough cash on hand for.
Oh, hold on.
Bespoke. Just okay.
Simmer down there, hot cakes. So at this point, the nanny, the governess, and the girls are like, heck, we've been at this hotel kind of a long time. What's the problem? Well, Edwina hadn't picked the girls up because Edwina forgot where she left them.
So there's... there is irresponsible parenting, and there is this.
Lady Pamela Hicks explains, apparently my mother had written down the name of the hotel on a piece of paper, then lost it.
Oh.
She just forgets. Oops. It's not that she doesn't want to get her kids, she just... doesn't know where they are.
Oh, I'm sure it was a pressing priority for her because normally...
You're stunned, right?
Yeah, this is...
Okay, just... so things are getting a little bit more desperate by November as the hotel was closing for winter. They're only open...
That's too bad.
They're a seasonal hotel.
But you can't make these children homeless.
And the hotel manager goes and tells the governess that... hey, we're closing up for the winter, honey, and you need to pay your bill.
Oh, no.
And the governess has zero money to pay the bill. Lady Pamela Hicks said that a nice man, whom she didn't know but whom recognized their last name, stepped in, has a little talk with the manager, like, hey, these two girls are daughters of a very wealthy and very prominent family, and maybe hotel manager, if you would continue to let them stay... undoubtedly, the hotel would be more than generously compensated. Yeah. Eventually, Edwina finds the paper that written the name of the hotel on. It was in a pocket of an outfit she hadn't worn in a long time.
Well, why would she?
Does Edwina go to pick up her girls?
Does she?
No. She sends her a lover, Bunny.
Oh, my God.
He's dispatched.
Uncle Bunny.
Uncle Bunny is dispatched to pick the girls up. Now, that would not be the only time the Mountbatten daughters would be sent somewhere to ensure their safety from growing political concerns and eventual war. At the outbreak of World War II, the Mountbattens decide to send the girls away for two major reasons. The first was that as someone originally from German descent, the Nazis announced that Louis Mountbatten would be tried as a war criminal and traitor if Germany won the war. That's reason number one. Reason number two was that, if you remember, Edwina's grandfather, Sir Ernest Castle, had been Jewish, which would cause the girls to be sent to a concentration camp.
Absolutely.
England was invaded.
Yeah, the fear of invasion was real.
So off to America go Patricia and Pamela to stay in New York City with Grace Vanderbilt.
Okay.
At her Fifth Avenue mansion. Pamela and Patricia will remain with Grace Vanderbilt until the end of the war.
At least Edwina knew where they were.
Well, there's an adult keeping track of them.
Uh-huh.
Thank you, Grace Vanderbilt. Okay, it wouldn't be this story in Edwina and Dickie if they didn't continue their love affairs. And it would take, like, literally, we're in episode 5. I don't even know. It would take a lot of time to go into more detail about all of the lovers of Edwina and Dickie. But suffice it to say, although they had both found long-term lovers, Bunny for Edwina and Yola for Dickie, that doesn't stop them from taking on some other lovers
Why would it?
Some of those other lovers for Edwina were American golfer Robert Sweeney, Bobby Sweeney.
Okay.
CBS founder Bill Paley.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh. Conductor Malcolm Sargent. Those are just a few. In all, Andrew Loney says that Edwina had at least 18 lovers throughout their marriage. Dickie was a little less promiscuous, but certainly had his fair share of lovers too, including Sybilla Tomaselli and Barbara Cartland. I do also want to let you know that Dickie had an affair with Margaret Campbell before she became the Duchess of Argyll. Margaret Campbell at one point was married to golf pro Robert Sweeney. That was her first husband. So Edwina is sleeping with Bobby Sweeney. Dickie's sleeping with Margaret Campbell.
His wife or his ex-wife. Not sure on the time frame.
We haven't talked about Margaret Campbell yet, the Duchess of Argyll, on Trashy Divorces or Done and Done. Her story is still coming. It is incredible, but I just wanted to connect that little bit over on Trashy Royals as it concerns Dickie and Edwina. Now, a few other lovers that Dickie had. Huh, you're going to love this one. Shirley MacLaine.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh. As well as, listen to this, wrap your head around it, as well as Bunny's daughter.
No.
And Dickie's goddaughter.
Oh, no.
Uh-huh. Her name was Anastasia Phillips. She would later become the Duchess of Abercorn. But Dickie has an affair with Bunny's daughter.
That's too much. That's too...
Dickie's love and sexual interests become a little bit more scandalous after Edwina's death. Some of the details of his post-Edwina sexual liaisons were covered by no less than the FBI, but we're going to get to that next week. Dickie, it turns out, was also a client of Madame Cloud, writer William Stadium, who worked for Mountbatten, said that Dickie was very careful when using the services of the upscale madam. He'll write that Mountbatten was, quote, so discreet the only place he'd see her girls was in Baron Ellie de Rothschild's private jet circling the skies above Paris,
wow.
Unquote. It's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Now's a great time. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Dickie and Edwina during World War II.
See you on the flip.
Hey, all you true crime fans. This is Mike Ferguson.
And this is Mike Morf.
And we'd like to invite you to listen to our podcast, Criminology.
Launched in 2017, we've covered a variety of strange cases from murders to missing persons. Some of the cases are ones you may not have heard of.
Other cases we cover are some of the most historic in true crime. There are 200 episodes of Criminology available to binge on right now. And new episodes come out every Saturday night.
Subscribe to Criminology today, wherever you listen to your podcast.
Hi, I'm Chris Gethard, and I'm very excited to tell you about Beautiful Anonymous, a podcast where I talk to random people on the phone. I tweet out a phone number, thousands of people try to call, I talk to one of them, they stay anonymous, I can't hang up, that's all the rules. I never know what's going to happen. We get serious ones. I've talked with meth dealers on their way to prison. I've talked to people who survived mass shootings. Crazy funny ones. I talked to a guy with a goose laugh, somebody who dresses up as a pirate on the weekends. I never know what's going to happen. It's a great show. Subscribe today, Beautiful Anonymous.
All right, friends, as much as Edwina has been a perhaps unlikable character so far in her life story, I'd like to let you know that World War II changed that in many ways. The war will give Edwina a purpose, which insofar throughout the other years of her life had really been lacking. Edwina feels useful at this time and dedicates herself wholeheartedly to the war effort. She was instrumental in traveling to the United States and garnering support for the war and encouraging the involvement of the United States. Edwina Mountbatten was transformed by the war and what she experienced. She worked tirelessly for charities, hospitals, raising money to aid the military as well as recruit volunteers. She was instrumental with the St. John Ambulance Brigade and oversaw inspecting first aid posts, air raid shelters, tube stations, convalescent homes, and residential nurseries. There is nothing about Edwina that shies away from danger. She puts herself in harm's way every day during the Blitz. Her work was not limited to England and the United States either. She'll inspect Allied hospitals throughout Northern Europe and Italy. After the war, Edwina continues to work on reconstruction efforts and the repatriation of prisoners of war in Southeast Asia. After Hiroshima, both she and Dickie help in Operation Zipper. What is Operation Zipper? Yeah. It's rescuing hundreds of thousands of Allied soldiers from Japanese prisoner of war camps. Operation Zipper. Edwina will fly over 33,000 miles inspecting camps in Rangoon, Bangkok, Sumatra, and Singapore. She was eventually awarded Dame Commander of the Royal Victorian Order, Dame Grand Cross of the Venerable Order of the Hospital of St. John of Jerusalem, Lady of the Imperial Order of the Crown of India, Dame Grand Cross of the Order of the British Empire, and the American Red Cross Medal for her works. War transforms her.
Mm-hmm.
If Edwina's kind of been shallow and forgets her kids, and she really does step it up during the war. Dickie, also a major player during World War II.
Sure, for Sea Lord.
Well, his efforts and works are far better known than Edwina's. Dickie was the captain and commander of the 5th Destroyer Flotilla aboard the HMS Kelly, which was actually torpedoed and sank. Then he was the commander of the HMS Javelin and then the aircraft carrier HMS Illustrious. His wartime service and accomplishments were the inspiration for Noel Coward's film In Which We Serve. Dickie, in October 1941, became the chief of combined operations headquarters and promoted to Commodore by Winston Churchill. In 1955, it finally happens. Dickie would finally realize his lifetime goal of reclaiming his father's title of First Sea Lord. As horrible as the war was in so many ways, it really does give Edwina and Dickie this mutual purpose and mission. This sort of re-energizes their marriage and how they feel about each other. They both rise courageously to the challenge of serving their country. Dickie writes to Edwina in October 1939 after they had had their fourth visit in just 6 weeks. "I can never tell you what fun it has been. It has taken the war to realize all you do mean to me. So at all events, I have Hitler to thank for that." "We've had our ups and downs in our 17 years of married life, but I wouldn't marry anyone else if I had all my life over again. I can't say more."
I mean, I can see it.
Thanks, Hitler. I mean, nobody's ever thanked Hitler for anything, but Dickie sure likes that it reunited him with Edwina.
I mean, these are really privileged people. It's a global crisis.
Andrew Loney writes, "The couple were in unison, perhaps for the first time ever. Pressure brought out the best in them. Their gifts of leadership, their organizational skills, their ability to use their connections, their meticulous preparation and command." Edwina, also through this, had gained self-confidence and esteem that had nothing to do with being pretty or her money or her family name. It's because she works hard and she uses the brains in her head. She'd never done that. She's finally been able to prove herself as capable and worthy of something important in her life. In 1941, after Edwina had a successful tour of 28 of the states here in the United States, she speaks to groups of over 1,000. She even dines with the Roosevelts at the White House. Dickie writes to her, I personally feel closer to you now than at any time during the previous 10 or 12 years. I have been so immensely proud of the really wonderful show you've put up here and know that all the family, not only Mama, but the King and Queen and George, etc., will be equally proud of all you have done when I tell them. Edwina, a little bit of a redemption. Kind of like that.
Yeah. No, that's really... because she was obviously lobbying to get the U.S. into the war, which did
Yeah, we need help.
didn't happen until after Pearl Harbor.
Edwina Dickey, war heroes, big help, purpose, marriage reunited. I need to tell you about the time that Bunny gets engaged. Oh,
Uncle Bunny, how could you?
Uncle Bunny in July 1944. Things drastically change for Edwina when Bunny Phillips decides to get married. The woman that Bunny got engaged to was a niece of her best friend and sister-in-law, Nada Mountbatten's. Mm-hmm. Her name was Gina Warnher, and the two had met when... oh, knife of all knives. Edwina had sat them next to each other at one of her dinner parties.
Sure.
Neither Edwina nor Dickie anticipated this news from Bunny, and both were shocked by it. I say shocked. Dickie and Bunny had become close friends. Dickie had made apparent peace with Edwina and Bunny, and even offered Edwina a divorce so she and Bunny could marry. And when Bunny tells Edwina the news about his engagement, she becomes despondent. During this time, she and Patricia, her daughter, grow much closer than they ever had been before. Why is this? Well, Patricia was convinced that Edwina was going to drown herself.
Oh, no.
During one of her long, sad walks that Edwina starts to take after Bunny announces his engagement. Edwina would just go wander. Patricia's like, oh, that doesn't look good for Mama.
That's not good.
Patricia was so concerned that she started insisting on accompanying her mother on those walks. And here, probably kind of for the first time, the two begin spending time together and bonding in a way that they'd never really done before.
Well, and by now, the kids are probably, like, in their early 20s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They got married, Dickie and Edwina got married in 1922. I think their first daughter was born in 24.
Yeah, so this isn't leave them in Budapest age.
No,
this
they're grown.
These are more adult children.
So Patricia, you know, helping out Edwina, Mama, a little bit. Dickie was also really supportive during this time as well. How weird is it to be like, oh... and her husband's so supportive of her lover getting married.
I'm so sorry your boyfriend is getting married to someone else.
Dickie realizes, it's just so ridiculous to say, right? Dickie realizes how distraught Edwina was and does his best to comfort her. Dickie writes, I must tell you again how deeply and sincerely I feel for you at this moment. I feel the difficulties will have disappeared and you'll find a new firm and lasting friendship. Based on 11 years of happiness. He always knew that I had accepted the fact after the war you were at liberty to get married, and I could not let either of you get the impression that anything I had ever done stood in the way. Like, Dickie's ready to go. Like, Bunny, you don't have... like, you can just marry Edwina if you guys want to be together. What happens here? The situation actually draws Edwina and Dickie closer together as well. Edwina will write to Dickie about his support. It has made me realize more than ever before how deeply devoted I am to you and what very real and true affection as well as immense admiration I have for you.
I don't quite know. That's not the same as Dickie being supportive. This is a jilted woman who is like, oh, here's a guy who still is into me. Okay, that's self-serving. Continue.
Okay, but wait, hold on. Gets better. Pamela is asked to be a bridesmaid in Bunny's wedding because Bunny loves
Bunny.
Her girls.
Yeah.
Edwina?
Nixes that.
Big no, big fat no. Pamela recalls, my mother told me firmly without looking at her diary that I would be at school that day and it would not be possible.
Oh my God. Well, you know.
All right. I love it when we get to fold the cheese for any of my friends who have been involved in my Done and Done series. We have been talking about the swans, the real story behind the swans. Let's unpack Edwina Mountbatten and Bill Paley for a moment. Many folks have gotten a little bit more familiar with and curious about CBS founder Bill Paley since Feud, Truman Capote versus the Swans, came out. Back on Trashy Divorces, we have covered Bill Paley a little bit. We've talked about some of the Swans. We've done them all on Done and Done as well. I need to let you know that Bill Paley was the promiscuous husband of socialite Babe Paley, who was Truman's number one swan prior to the release of his nastiest chapter that ever happened in fiction, Lecoq Basque, 1965. Bill Paley is a notorious womanizer. Edwina was only one of Bill Paley's many, many lovers, just as Bill Paley was one of her many, many lovers. When Sally Bedell Smith wrote an extensive biography of Bill Paley, the LA Times summarized it and included this little following bit about the relationship between Edwina and Bill. As an honorary colonel, he went off with a golden dog tag from Cartier and his personal valet to fight World War II in such trenches as London's Claridge's Hotel. Later, he did give some service as a propagandist in occupied Germany, but mostly he spent the war boozing and betting Pamela Churchill and Edwina Mountbatten and his secretary. Now, let's unpack that just a little bit. Pamela Churchill at this time is Pamela, Churchill, Harriman, Hayward, all of them. She's coming up, Edwina Mountbatten too, and his secretary. And Sally Bedell's actual book, In All His Glory, The Life of William S. Paley, the author writes, Paley had hooked up with Edwina Mountbatten, whose husband Louis was in Burma as Supreme Commander, Eisenhower's counterpart in Asia. Cheer up, Dickie said in one of his letters to Edwina. Don't mope. See some of your friends. Bill Paley, for example. Journalist Stuart Scheftel wrote, she wasn't in love with Bill, but she liked him as much as she liked the other boys. Biographer Philip Ziegler wrote about Paley's attraction to Edwina. Highly intelligent without being intellectual, elegant and vital, rather conventionally beautiful. Edwina blazed in London society with a fierce brilliance, which alarmed some and dazzled almost all. Restless, egocentric, intolerant. She was rarely a comfortable person to be with, yet equally was never boring. Like Paley, she was hedonistic and promiscuous. She threw herself into pleasure. Sally Bedell Smith will write about the end of the affair between Bill and Edwina. Late at night, Paley and Edwina could be spotted together coming out of the psychological warfare offices, and they were seen frequently over dinner in fashionable Mayfair. Given Paley's high profile and the important position of her husband, some high-level members of the British government finally told her that the affair was getting too well known. They broke it off, but Paley still maintained an affection for her. Later, after returning to the United States, he would send her lipstick, perfume, and other luxury items.
Let me throw in, since you mentioned Pamela Churchill, this would be the daughter-in-law of Winston, who,
correct,
during World War II, was sort of became one of his confidants.
Yes.
But not, just in case the listener does not know, this wasn't like Bill Paley was sleeping with Winston Churchill's wife or something like that. It was...
No, sleeping with Winston Churchill's daughter-in-law.
Sure.
Bill Paley slept with everyone.
Just wanted to clarify.
We've covered Pamela's story on Trashy Divorces. We have covered Bill's first wife, Dorothy Hart Hershon. Hearst. She married Hearst as well, but oh God, it's just so, it's all connected.
I remember it being very complicated.
So later, Paley's first wife, Babe Paley, is Bill's second wife. Bill was married before to Dorothy Hart. Dorothy comments on learning about Bill's affair with Edwina, as well as his affair with Pamela Churchill. She says, "Do you think I was surprised? I'd had 13 years of dames. I knew this was his illness. There were always girls. He never stopped. It was absolutely pathological. So now I knew about Edwina and Pamela. What's the point to know more? What difference would it make?" Poor Dorothy. I do like it when we can fold the cheese and our sister podcast all come together. Now's a great time to take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Patricia Mountbatten's wedding. Dickie has some feelings about his daughter. And Edwina still has one more affair to have in her life.
We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Chris Gethard, and I'm very excited to tell you about Beautiful Anonymous, a podcast where I talk to random people on the phone. I tweet out a phone number, thousands of people try to call, you talk to one of them, they stay anonymous, I can't hang up, that's all the rules. I never know what's going to happen. We get serious ones. I've talked with meth dealers on their way to prison. I've talked to people who survived mass shootings. Crazy funny ones. I talked to a guy with a goose laugh, somebody who dresses up as a pirate on the weekends. I never know what's going to happen. It's a great show. Subscribe today, Beautiful Anonymous.
It is well known that Dickie was instrumental in the courtship of his nephew, Philip, and Princess Elizabeth. Dickie was determined that Philip should marry Princess Elizabeth and that the future heirs to the throne be Mountbattens.
Mission accomplished.
Well, Dickie had been working behind the scenes toward this goal for years. Dickie picked this up when his brother George passed away because it was George who was doing this first with Philip. Goal, success. Philip and Princess Elizabeth did fall in love. And the king and queen don't think that Elizabeth is old enough to get married. And the general public is unaware of the romance. So it's fitting that the first time there were openly public rumors of a romance between Prince Philip of Greece and Princess Elizabeth was at the wedding of Dickie's daughter, Patricia. Patricia will marry John Knatchbull, the 7th Lord Brabourne, in October 1946. Andrew Loney writes, "It was at the wedding where Princess Elizabeth's closeness to Philip became clear when a newsreel shot caught a tender glance between the two." That was all it took. It got caught on camera. Now the world is talking. It happens at Patricia's wedding.
They made eye contact.
Well, I mean, you can, like, you know, you can tell, like, Elizabeth did a little giggle. It was pretty cute. Dickie is not shy about professing deep love for his daughters. He loves Patricia. He loves Pamela. He adores his daughters. But Dickie was clearly more fond of his eldest daughter, Patricia. Mountbatten's secretary, his name is John Barat, later described the relationship between Dickie and his daughter Patricia this way. His feeling towards her verged on the unhealthy. He worshipped her. I want to unpack this. This is a little weird, but we're going to talk about it. When Patricia was 30 years old, long married, Dickie writes her a letter on New Year's Eve that describes his intense feelings for his child. The letter's contents really speak for themselves. Here is an excerpt. "It is close on midnight. Most people are out at parties, but I have just finished work and my mind, as always, turns to you. You yourself know pretty well all that you have meant to me for the past 30 years, for I have never disguised my feeling for you. But in the years to come, after Mummy and I have both passed on, as the euphemistic term goes, I would have liked to feel that there was some record in the bottom of your black box of the part you play in my life. I have sometimes regretted that you turned into such a very lovely and attractive woman, because I certainly would have loved you just as much and very possibly even more if you had remained the ungainly, lanky creature with odd teeth and a slightly receding chin that you presented with when you first went to school. Shame you got pretty, kid, because I would have loved you more if you were ugly." What is that?
I feel like he also had an unusually close and open relationship with his mother. I wonder, I wonder if it's just a Louis thing, just a Dickie thing.
It's not the worst part of the letter.
Okay.
Physical attraction, by no means unknown to Freud, between parents and children.
Oh, no, sir.
Has hardly ever entered into our very remarkable friendship.
Hardly ever. Okay, that's good.
The attraction which you have had for me from the day I first saw you in April 1924 was an almost mystical feeling that you were really a part of me living on in the world. From the first day I saw you and was allowed to help you with you, I have never really had eyes for anyone else. You know how basically fond I am and always have been of Mummy. You know pretty well about my girlfriends, but none of them have had the magic something which you have. I have grown so fond of Pammy. Few fathers could be fonder of a daughter or miss her more than I miss Pammy now, but the mainspring of my love is that she is your sister and you love her. Every achievement in life since 1924 has been achieved for you and because of you. If in years to come history takes the view that I did well in my jobs, the credit must all go to you. There is always one woman in a man's life, and darling, she is you. Bless you always. You'll never really know how much I love you. Make of that what you will. That's a lot.
Maybe some of that had to do with his wife's just absolute inconstancy. Maybe his daughter took on sort of an emotional role as someone he could count on. That's a lot.
I sure loved you when you were ugly, but you're a looker now. Like, I don't even know what that is. Okay. We're not quite done. Edwina's going to pick up another lover.
Of course.
Of course. It's Edwina. Hmm? In 1947, the Mountbattens leave for India. They were to be the last viceroy and vicereine of India and govern over the transfer of power back for India to be self-ruled. This would be a painful and bloody process due to the fighting between the Hindus and the Muslims. This appointment to the position for the Mountbattens has often been referred to as a poisoned chalice. Patricia was already married at the time, but Pamela will go with her parents to India. While there, Pamela and Dickie's relationship did strengthen, and they were each other's constant companions. Andrew Loney writes, "There were long 18-hour days, which began at dawn when Dickie and Pamela would ride together on the ridge above Delhi with a couple of armed bodyguards, sometimes with Mountbatten practicing his polo swing along the way. His younger daughter had become his new confidant, with Patricia now married." Right away, the attraction between Edwina and guess who? Nehru.
Of course.
Of course, was evident. Edwina and Nehru spend a great deal of time together and in no time at all begin a romantic relationship. There is still speculation about if the relationship was physical, but there is no question that it was intensely intimate. The connection was so fast and obvious that one observer writes in his diary that Nehru's relationship with Lady Mountbatten is sufficiently close to have raised many eyebrows. Historian Philip Ziegler said the relationship was to endure until Edwina Mountbatten's death, intensely loving, romantic, trusting, generous, idealistic, even spiritual. If there was any physical element, it can only have been of minor importance to either party. This is some other kind of love for Edwina that isn't her promiscuous, hedonistic sort of thing. This is a very, very different thing. How does Dickie feel about this public and evident relationship between his wife and the man who would become India's first prime minister? Philip Ziegler claims it was one of pleasure, explaining he liked and admired Nehru. It was useful to him that the prime minister should find such attractions in the governor general's home. It was agreeable to find Edwina almost permanently in good temper. The advantages of the alliance were obvious. Their daughter, Pamela, agrees with Ziegler She said that her father condoned the relationship and that he, Edwina, and Nehru were a happy threesome, quote unquote. In one letter, Dickey wrote, "She and Nehru are so sweet together. They really dote on each other." There were.
I mean, I guess this does make your job in diplomacy a whole lot easier.
There were and still rumors have been going on that the Mountbattens and Nehru were not just a figurative threesome, but actually engaged in sexual threesomes too. Stories of a possible love triangle have long been speculated about, but there is no evidence for or against that. In 2009, the Daily Mail published an article about the Mountbattens and Nehru titled "A Spicy Menage a Trois: The Shocking Love Triangle Between Lord Mountbatten, His Wife, and the Founder of India." The article, which also discussed the film that was made about the three called Indian Summer, starring Hugh Grant and Kate Blanchett, reads in part, "Undignified as it seems against the backdrop of these huge historic events in which they were caught up, there are those who suspect that Nehru, like both Mountbattens, had bisexual tendencies, and that Dickey, in a last attempt to establish physical intimacy with his unresponsive wife, may have joined them in a physical menage a trois. But Edwina did more than have romantic attachments during her time as Viceroyal of India. She, Edwina, was really popular. She was an admired figure during this time. She takes her role really seriously. She helped to accelerate the partition. She aided in relief efforts. She supervised evacuations. She inspected hospitals. She does many, many goodwill appearances. She visits troops that were all initially anti-British. She also had a great deal of influence over important decisions through her relationship with Nehru. Once the Mountbattens leave India, Edwina and Nehru still visit each other often, and when they were in between visits, they'd write each other love letters. Edwina makes zero attempt to hide those love letters from Dickey. In fact, the two often sit around and talk about his love letters to Edwina. In 1952, Edwina writes to Dickey about the letters, saying, "Some of them have no personal remarks at all. Others are love letters. Though you yourself well realize the strange relationship, most of it is spiritual, which exists between us." Not all of the letter collection has been published, but a few of those letters have been made public. One letter that Nehru wrote to Edwina includes this bit. "Suddenly I realized, and perhaps you also did, that there was a deeper attachment between us, that some uncontrollable force, of which I was dimly aware, drew us to one another. I was overwhelmed and at the same time exhilarated by this new discovery. We talked more intimately, as if some veil had been removed and we could look into each other's eyes without fear or embarrassment." When Edwina was found dead in her bed in 1960, at the young age of 58, the collection of Nehru's love letters were in bed beside her. She'd been reading them as she passed away. Which brings us to Edwina's death.
Yes.
Edwina had been warned by her doctor that if she continued to work at the pace that she had been working, she would not have much longer to live. Edwina did not share this information with her family, nor did Edwina choose to make any adjustments to her very busy schedule. She's kind of a whirlwind, that girl. February 21st, 1960, Edwina was found dead in her bed in North Borneo, for an inspection for the St. John Ambulance Brigade. The doctor who was summoned pronounced her death from an artery coronary thrombosis.
I'm guessing that's a heart attack of some kind or another. Okay.
Yeah, Dickey learned of her death when he was at Broadlands. He had been waiting for a phone call from her, but when he answered, he was instead told that she had passed away. He wrote in his diary February 23rd, so day and a half after. "Miserable. I never realized how much I loved her and what she meant to me." Edwina's body was returned to Broadlands on February 24th. When the car carrying her coffin was expected to arrive, Dickie and all of the household staff came out to greet her for the last time. Edwina's body was then taken to Romsey Abbey on the Broadlands estate, where 52 male members of the staff took turns in pairs to stand guard over her coffin. In accordance with her wishes, Edwina was buried at sea. Her coffin was covered in the Union Jack and was put aboard the frigate HMS Wakeful for her final journey. The Archbishop of Canterbury led a short service, ending with the traditional words said at a sea burial, "We therefore commit her body to the deep." And then her coffin was tipped into the sea while Royal Marine buglers play the last post and reveille. Dickie, in full naval uniform, openly cried, openly wept, made no attempt to hide his tears.
Sure.
He kissed an all-white wreath and tossed it into the sea. Nearby, Nehru had sent a ship to escort the one carrying Edwina. Lady Pamela Hicks wrote, "Waiting a respectful distance away was the Indian frigate, INS Trishul, and as we steamed away, she took our place, and on Nehru's instructions, marigolds were scattered upon the waves." And that, my darlings, is the end of Edwina, the Edwina and Louis arc so far. We are going to come back next week and talk about Louis as a widower.
Yeah.
His FBI file.
It gets dark.
But that is, with tears in my eyes, the end of Edwina.
Mm-hmm.
Bless her.
Quite a life, you know. Definitely, they earned the Careless People title last time. But
they really, really did.
I'm glad that they, I don't know, did not just scurry off to America and ignore the war. Good on them.
What a ride. Edwina and Louis Mountbatten. Trashy crowns? I don't know. She'd forget where they were. She'd put them in a pocket.
Yes.
Put them in a wardrobe somewhere. Forget what she had.
I'll find it later.
Goodness.
Well, thank you for that, Alicia. And if you, listeners, are looking for other ways to hear more from us, don't forget our other podcasts on Wednesdays and Sundays. We publish Trashy Divorces wherever you get your podcasts. And on Mondays, Alicia, what do you do?
Yeah, Mondays, Done and Done comes out. The High Society podcast about all these people, not exactly royal, but there sure are a lot of trashy royal connections over in Done and Done. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out with us today. Patreon friends, don't forget Edwina's natal chart is coming for you. We can't tell you how much we appreciate you listening and telling your friends about what we do over here, trashy wise, your support on Patreon, your kind reviews, your emails. Y'all just are the best.
Mm-hmm.
We really appreciate you.
We do.
I can't wait to be back next week with Dickie, widower. Huh. Until then, my darlings, keep your eye on the throne.
Polish up those crowns, friends.
Big love, everybody. Have an incredible rest of the week.
Bye.
Bye.